Hi everyone, I'm Dr. Trevor Cates. Welcome to the Spa Doctor Show, where we talk about health tips and strategies to help you be smart, sexy, and strong. On today's show, I have as my guest, Dr. Nalini Chilkov. Dr. Nalini is the founder of IntegrativeCancerAnswers.com and a leading-edge authority on integrative cancer care. She is the author of the best-selling book, 32 Ways to Outsmart Cancer, How to Create a Body in Which Cancer Cannot Thrive. Dr. Nalini's Outsmart Cancer programs are recognized as the most comprehensive science-based safe natural programs for supporting cancer patients, cancer survivors, and those who do not want to get cancer. For over 30 years, Dr. Nalini has helped thousands of people, many with serious and chronic illnesses, achieve and maintain extraordinary health and longevity. She is listed as a go-to clinician in Suzanne Summer's book, Doctors Who Are Curing Cancer and How to Prevent Getting It in the First Place. She has appeared as a health expert on NBC TV and has been recognized by WebMD and Dr. Oz's ShareCare.com as one of the top 10 online influencers in breast cancer. And she writes a very popular blog for the Huffington Post. National renowned physicians Dr. Frank Lipman and six-time New York Times bestselling author Dr. Mark Hyman call her my go-to resource. On today's show, Dr. Nalini shares with us what increases our risk for cancer and best and worst foods for cancer prevention, and she shares specific supplements and herbs to help keep cancer at bay. And she even covers hot topics like bioidentical hormones and the soy controversy. So please enjoy the show. On today's show, I have as my guest, Dr. Nalini Chilkov. It's great to have you on the show, Dr. Nalini.
I'm so glad to be here. Thank you, Trevor.
Yeah, we're talking about a really important topic. Cancer affects really all of us in some way. And so I whether it's something that we personally have struggled with or someone close to us, but every one of us, I believe, is some way touched by cancer. Wouldn't you agree?
Absolutely. I mean, the statistics are pretty daunting. 1 in 2 men and 1 in 3 women in their lifetime in the United States will have some kind of a cancer experience. That's a lot of people.
That is a lot of people. And do you feel like that it seems like the cancer rates have really been increasing. Do you find that that is true?
Yes, it actually is true. If we just look at something like breast cancer, where we have a lot of statistics, the rates increased by about 50-fold since the 1960s to now. That's a lot.
Yeah.
That's quite a lot.
Wow. So what do you think is playing a role in this increase that we're seeing in these different types of cancer?
Well, I think there are 2 really big primary causes. The biggest one is the impact of environmental chemicals and toxic exposures, which interact with our genetics. Cancer starts when you have your DNA or your genes are damaged. And it can take sometimes 20 years for that to turn into a cancer. But we've had just huge exposures of chemicals we're not biologically designed to deal with. And so there's that. And then there's also just modern life and the fact that we don't get enough sleep and we stay up at night when it's with electric lights when it should be dark and we should be in a 24-hour cycle with nature and the sun, and all of those sorts of things really impact our normal immunity. Even if flying in an airplane exposes you to a huge amount of radiation, crossing time zones, kind of things that are just part of modern life we take for granted, actually compromise our immune systems.
Yeah, I it's just part of modern day living, I guess. But yes. I know that some people are probably thinking, but haven't chemicals always been around? I mean, our grandfathers, great grandfathers have been using pesticides, right? So why is it different now?
Well, I think number one, you get a cumulative effect in the environment. And because we're mammals and we're kind of like at the top of the food chain, we start to concentrate these chemicals in our body over time. And it's also an interesting and rather complex issue that from generation to generation, so you mentioned grandparents, what happened to your grandparents' genes can be affecting the grandchildren's genes several generations later. So it's actually complicated.
Yeah. So are we, so what do we do about this? I mean, are we stuck with our genes? Are there things that we can do to protect ourselves?
Yes, absolutely. So I think one of the main things to really understand is that genetics aren't fate. You know, they're just potential, and that genes have on switches and off switches. And people who are more vulnerable to the effects of environmental chemicals or, say, radiation from X-rays or even from the sun may have poor gene repair. When the genes get damaged, they may be less efficient at repairing their genes. And so those are more vulnerable people, or maybe even what we might say like the canary in the mine, you know. These are people for whom the current environment is a little more toxic than somebody else who can recover and repair damaged genes, or who has more efficient detoxification capacity. So it's one of the things we can do is understand our own biology, our own physiology, our own vulnerability more. And you can actually test for what we call genomic traits as opposed to genetic traits. Genomic traits kind of tell you the machinery of the cell, how things are working in you. And so you could actually do a panel and look at your genetic potential for being able to detoxify chemicals, right? Specific chemicals or drugs, which things would be more toxic to you. And you can also look and see if you have really better repair from the exposure to radiation or sunlight. And so you can get a sense if you're more vulnerable, but family history kind of tells you that. But the bottom line is there's a lot you can do. So one of the most simple things is just to eat a lot of color in fruits and vegetables, because every plant pigment, the things that make fruits and vegetables beautiful, actually every one of those colors is a plant chemical that enters into the nucleus of your cell and can turn genes on and off. And so that's actually why it matters what you eat.
Yeah. Okay, great. So those, you know, antioxidant-rich foods, colorful fruits and vegetables, any ones in particular you think are really important?
Well, there's a handful of, you know, what we might call superfoods or super plant chemicals. So we can talk about a few of those, certainly. So again, when you look at your food, you want to see a lot of color. So if we look at a tomato, for example, and that deep red of tomatoes, the presence of lycopene in tomatoes is very powerful for all the hormonal cancers like breast cancer, prostate cancer, ovarian cancer, etc. And so tomatoes are a great part of the diet. If we look at something like blueberries, that really deep blue color, there's a phytochemical called pterostilbene that's not only great for your brain health and your brain and memory and brain aging, but absolutely protects DNA from damage, and it can also support repair. And there's a sister chemical in plants to pterostilbene, which is resveratrol, which is found in kind of red and blue fruits, and that would be like your purple and red grapes are the most concentrated. Even cranberries have a little bit in them. And so you can see these really deeply colored fruits and vegetables. So resveratrol is one of the only plant chemicals known to actually increase longevity by protecting your DNA from damage. And we actually use resveratrol in very high doses in cancer treatment. It's very powerful. And then another really powerful plant chemical is found in all the broccoli and cabbage family, and that's sulforaphane. Sulforaphane is absolutely fantastic. It's highest in broccoli sprouts and in kale and in broccoli. And it's interesting, with kale and broccoli, if you steam it lightly, it's actually more available than if you eat it raw. And sulforaphanes actually protect cells by being an antioxidant, but they also help you detoxify your estrogen. And so too much estrogen stimulation can cause breast cancer and prostate cancer. But sulforaphanes actually interrupt the whole development and progression of cancer cells at every single step. So they're very powerful. So should really include cabbage family vegetables in your diet every day. So those are some of the big food-related ones.
Excellent. And so, and you mentioned with the cruciferous vegetables, like broccoli, lightly steaming those. What, and that's great, great information. What about the other foods that you mentioned? Does it matter if they're frozen, cooked, and anything along those lines? Like lycopene, for example, with tomatoes.
Well, you know, it's interesting. If you lightly cook tomatoes, it actually makes the lycopene more available. And if you actually cook it with a little bit of olive oil, it makes it even more available. So, you know, there's a big fad today on raw food. But our digestive tracts are such that it can be harder to actually extract some of these powerful plant chemicals out of raw food, and that lightly cooking is actually a way to make these things more available to us.
Right. And then I've heard that freezing, you know, like frozen berries can be just as good. They don't have to be fresh. Is that
yes? Yes, because these plant chemicals are pretty stable. What's not very stable are active enzymes that are in fresh food that's uncooked, because they're very temperature sensitive. But actually, all the minerals are always available, whether they're raw or cooked. So our digestive tracts actually do a little bit better if we have some cooked food there.
Okay. And what about organic? Eating organic, how important is that?
Huge, 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 huge. So because if we say that the exposure to chemicals is our biggest problem in terms of cancer risk, one of the easiest ways to reduce your exposures are to just eat fresh, whole, unprocessed food that's been grown without hormones, without pesticides, without herbicides, without growth hormones, and without added estrogen. The easiest way to get chemical exposures reduced is just eat whole, fresh, organic food as much as you can.
Okay, and what about meat?
Well, you know, there's not one diet that's an anti-cancer diet, so you can eat a little bit of animal protein in your diet. Red meat, however, is problematic because it's so high in iron. That's what makes meat red, is the iron-rich blood that's in red meat. And iron is actually a super pro-oxidant, meaning it can actually damage cells more readily. And so in all the digestive tract cancers and a lot of research in colon cancer, red meat is actually a risk factor. And it's even more of a risk factor if you grill it, to get anything blackened. Any kind of a blackened protein actually turns that into a carcinogenic chemical. And so if you like grilled food, really lightly, don't blacken anything. And it's only grilled proteins that are a problem. If you grill vegetables, that's not a problem. So red meat, you can have a small amount in your diet. If you have a history of colon cancer or stomach cancer or esophageal cancer, get rid of the red meat. And if you do eat red meat, you can eat grass-fed, hormone-free, free-range. And then you're getting lots of omega-3 fatty acids, and then there's no hormone additives either. And I think it's really important for people to understand what real food is. So in commercially grown animal products, they're grain-fed mostly, but what's real food is over here, is grass-fed, free-range, because when animals graze, they make high omega-3s, which are the really anti-inflammatory, very protective, and actually anti-cancer fats. But over here is commercial fake food. And I think it's important, if you have a steak in front of you and one is grass-fed and one is grain-fed, this one's food, this one's not. Right? It's important to understand that.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so now what about sugar?
Well, sugar is the enemy, because sugar is actually a drug. It's not actually a food. And it's a manufactured, highly concentrated. But we have to consider also fruit sugars and maple syrup and agave and honey. These very concentrated sugars, even though they're natural, actually have a big impact on triggering insulin. Every time you eat something that has sugar or carbohydrate in it, a starch, a grain, a sugar, a sweetener, then you're going to trigger insulin. And insulin is a super growth factor for cancer. A lot of people think it's the blood sugar that's the big problem, but it's actually insulin that's the bigger problem. So we have an epidemic of diabetes, pre-diabetes, metabolic syndrome, insulin resistance. Today in America, over 40% of the population is suffering from having high blood sugar and high insulin. This doubles your risk of cancer and of cancer recurrence. So eating sugar and having too many concentrated sweets in the diet is actually a risk factor for cancer, not only diabetes and metabolic syndrome, but for cancer. And if you're a cancer survivor, then you have to be very, very mindful about eating what we call a low glycemic diet. And glycemic really means sugariness, right? So if something tastes sweet on your tongue, it's not rocket science. That's going to raise your blood sugar. The legal sweetener is stevia, which is a plant extract that doesn't trigger insulin.
Yeah, definitely. So even things like fruit juice, orange juice, a lot of people drink orange juice in the morning at breakfast time, or apple juice, or these smoothies that people grab at the health food store thinking that they're getting a nice healthy snack. Those are full of sugar too, right?
Full of sugar because the fiber's gone when you juice stuff. So you want, if you like that sort of fresh kind of a either vegetable or fruit, you want to put it in a Vitamix or a Nutribullet or something. Keep the fiber in it because the fiber slows down the absorption so you don't get this big blood sugar and insulin rise after you ingest it. And you really want to minimize fruit. We eat way too much fruit, way too much. Those smoothies that are made with bananas and mango puree and apple juice concentrate, they're just full of sugar. And so it's not really healthy. And if you want to do a smoothie, you should have some protein and some healthy fat, like some flax oil or chia seeds or even flaxseed meal or a little avocado or almond butter in your smoothie, even a little coconut oil you could put in. And that actually slows down the absorption so that you can actually have a nice, rich, nutrient-dense, good-tasting shake that doesn't trigger your blood sugar and your insulin. So it tastes sweet on your tongue. It's too sweet. You know, if we're really sensitive to sweet on our tongue because in early human history, sweet was rare. It was very rare. And so we could taste it strongly. And now we're just addicted to that taste.
Yeah, so true. Such a big problem. And I love your ideas of adding oils and fats to smoothies. And people might be thinking that just doesn't sound good, but they really, I mean, avocado in a smoothie is really good.
Really
it's
good.
Creamy and rich, yeah.
Yeah, it makes it yummy, you know, it makes it like a milkshake. Also, like if people are doing pea protein or rice protein, they don't want a dairy shake like from whey, then if you actually add some lecithin or phosphatidylcholine that's made from non-GMO soy sources, that also makes it really creamy and rich, which the vegetarian protein powders don't have that creaminess that make it like a milkshake. So by putting an avocado or some oil and you get that kind of rich, yummy kind of a shake.
Yeah. And I know there are probably people thinking, what, I can't juice anymore? What about vegetable juices?
Well, still, you got to have the fiber. You know, if our goal is to have a whole food diet, it's really better to have the fiber because even vegetables are, you know, primarily carbohydrate. And so anything that's a carbohydrate will trigger an insulin release in your blood. And so you really want to keep the fiber in everything.
Okay, good. And then what about supplements? Are there certain supplements that you think are important?
Yes, there's really a handful that are super important. I'm a big fan of people using a good multivitamin, but if you have cancer risk, you want that multi to be iron-free and copper-free because both iron and copper are growth factors for tumor cells. So if you have cancer risk or cancer history, then you want to be mindful of that in your supplements. And also the omega-3 fatty acids are very important because they're super anti-inflammatory. And we mean EPA, DHA, fish oils when we say that. And cancer is an inflammatory process. And so when we eat an anti-inflammatory diet by having a lot of plant foods as well as healthy fats. I also supplement with the omega-3s because it's actually hard to get enough in the modern diet. So somewhere between 2,000 to 6,000 milligrams, depending on how much inflammatory control that you need, but like a minimum of 2,000 milligrams a day. And then also it's very important to have some kind of antioxidants in your supplements. So I usually put in the cancer kind of a protocol, I'll put in curcumin, which is a potent phytochemical that has interactions with over 100 different genes. And there's no drug that does that, that's safe. And curcumin is super anti-tumor, super anti-inflammatory. So always put that in. I also put in some kind of sulforaphane. So if you don't think you're going to eat a lot of broccoli or kale or broccoli sprouts, you can actually take a capsule of concentrated sulforaphane. And so that's a nice thing to do. You'll see it as DIM or IC3 or glucoraphanin, something like that. And I also always put vitamin D in because vitamin D is one of the most protective vitamins against cancer. It's really a kind of a hormone, and vitamin D minimum of 2,000 units a day, but some of my patients take up to 10,000 units a day. And the only way to really know how much vitamin D you need is to do a blood test, and you want your vitamin D to be somewhere between 55 to 80 to get cancer protection. And so you have to measure to do that. And people say, well, can't I get vitamin D by hanging out in the sun? And my answer to that is, well, if you were naked and running around on the equator, you could. But in modern life, we don't spend enough time outside.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. I used to have a practice in Santa Barbara, and I would even have surfers that spent tons of time on the beach, and they'd still be vitamin D deficient.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. So, yeah, all really important nutrients. Now, I have to ask, because it's been coming up in the media a lot lately, about the concerns about supplements. Some of these media stories have been saying that supplements are dangerous, that they can cause cancer. So what do you think about those reports?
Well, the first thing I always say when patients come in and say, I read in the New York Times, or I read in the LA Times, or I heard on the news, I say, please don't get your medical information from television or the internet unless you know the source, because a lot of media campaigns are driven by drug companies, actually. So we have to be careful where the information comes from. But what's really important is to understand which brands of supplements are high quality, professional quality, safe, uncontaminated, and non-toxic. And so that is super, super important. And you'll see on a label, you'll see now GMP, which means that the company voluntarily uses good manufacturing practices. Now, that doesn't mean it's professional grade. So there's a handful of companies actually that are primarily sold to clinicians and professionals, but that are available to the general public. And if you stick with those companies and get some advice from a healthcare professional about which brands are those qualities, that's really what you want to do, because what that means, what you pay for, is that what's on the label is in fact inside that capsule. So if it says 100 milligrams, it is. But even more important, it means that every raw material was tested for contamination. Yeah. And that is what you want. And I also very much discourage people from buying private label vitamins in the health food store or in a pharmacy chain, because you have no idea who makes them. And so you want to really stick to reliable brands, and that's super important. So if something comes on the advice of a healthcare professional, then it's more likely to be a professional quality. And some of them are actually pharmaceutical grade. And so if you're going to spend your money on herbs and supplements, you want to be sure they're safe, and you want to make sure that they're actually uncontaminated and the dose is reliable as well.
Right. Okay, great. Thank you. I think that's such important information. What about other herbs? Are there any other herbs you wanted to talk about?
Yeah. So we mentioned curcumin, which comes from turmeric. That's one of the big cancer herbs. But I always like to talk about the great medicinal mushrooms of Chinese medicine, because they are readily available and they're so powerful. So, for example, one of the most well-known is reishi mushroom, R-E-I-S-H-I, reishi mushroom. The Chinese name is lingzhi, and the botanical name is Ganoderma. And this is one of the great mushrooms of Chinese medicine. It's actually called the mushroom of immortality because it was used by the emperors for longevity. And the reason that it has these properties are actually several-fold. One is that they're really, really rich in polysaccharides and beta-glucans. And these are chemicals in nature that trigger your immune system. And so we call them immune modulators. And they actually have anti-tumor activity, but they also increase the amount of your natural killer cells, which are the cells of your immune system that go after cancer cells and also after viral cells. So they really ramp up your immunity. But Ganoderma, reishi mushroom, is also super anti-inflammatory. And so it's very powerful in that way. And you can even use this as an immune tonic for someone who has autoimmune disease because it's also anti-inflammatory. So you're not going to make somebody who has arthritis or asthma or lupus worse, right? So you have to be very careful that way. But also these mushrooms are very, very rich in a fat called CLA, conjugated linoleic acid. And all, even the little button mushrooms we eat in our salads have all these properties, but not as concentrated. And CLA is anti-inflammatory, anti-tumor, and it increases your insulin sensitivity. And so it's really powerful in all these factors that are important in cancer. So those medicinal mushrooms, and so Ganoderma is the most available. You'll also have probably heard of turkey tail mushroom. And this is Coriolis, and it's also one of the really, really potent anti-tumor, but it also has these other properties. But you have to make sure you buy hot water extracted medicinal mushroom products. These are the ones that are going to retain these immune modulating properties.
Interesting, because most herbs and plants are extracted with alcohol, correct?
Yeah.
If they're, you know, like tinctures and things, or they're powders.
Yes.
But you're saying that this is a water, hot water extraction.
Yeah, so it'll say that on the label. And you'll even see some tinctures, which are alcohol extracts, use hot water processed mycelia from the mushrooms. So, and that can actually allow us to extract even more properties by using both hot water extraction and alcohol extraction on the same material. So you just have to be mindful. Again, there's just a handful of companies that sell that kind of product.
Yeah. It's great information to have. Any other herbs that you wanted to mention? Are those the biggest ones?
Well, I also want to talk about a plant chemical called berberine, B-E-R-B-E-R-I-N-E, which is found in a lot of medicinal plants. I think a lot of people are familiar with golden seals, really rich in berberine. That's a common herb in America. But in Chinese medicine, we have a very famous anti-tumor herb, and it's called Scutellaria bicalensis, or Huang Qin. And this is found in almost every anti-tumor formula. And largely, it's due to the fact that it's rich in berberine. And so sometimes I'll just give berberine in capsules to patients. But berberine is super anti-inflammatory, super anti-tumor, and also has this impact on insulin and blood sugar. So you can see that plant medicine is multitasking, right? And so if, like, curcumin interacts with over 100 genes, resveratrol interacts with over 50 genes, they have all these multitasking properties. The mushrooms are anti-inflammatory, immune modulating, affect blood sugar. When you use plant medicine, you don't have to use very many things to get a multiplicity of effects. And these plant chemicals also bind to our cell receptors, enter the nucleus of our cell, talk to our genes, which not synthetic chemicals don't do that. You know? So plant medicine and food medicine are so powerful.
Yeah, so true. And you know, the conventional routes for cancer, chemotherapy, radiation, surgery, how do you feel that they play a role in conjunction with what we're talking about today?
Yes, they do. You know, they're not perfect, but it really depends when you're diagnosed with cancer also. So if you're diagnosed very early and you don't have a big tumor mass, you have a lot more choices in treatment, right? But if you're diagnosed late, really what you want is to buy some time and some good quality of life. So there is a place for chemotherapy and radiation therapy, and those decisions should be highly individualized. And for patients who are considering chemotherapy, it's my opinion that those decisions should also be highly individualized. And so most oncologists have a pretty cookbook approach. If you have this kind of cancer, then you're going to get this cocktail of chemotherapy. But it's really important to push for individualized care by looking at the genetics of the tumor cell, the genetics of the person, the medical history of that person, what other treatments they've already had, to actually pick exactly the right thing. And a thoughtful oncologist can be asked to do that. It's just not routine.
Yeah. And do you feel like people, I know sometimes people feel like they have to choose. Am I going to go the natural medicine route or am I going to go the conventional route? Do you find that there's a way to combine the two?
Actually, most people who are looking for what I call integrative cancer care are in fact combining the two. And sometimes that's actually your best option. So if you have a big tumor and it's operable, then you want to opt for surgery for sure, because your first decision and goal is to get rid of as many of the cancer cells as that you can, because that keeps you safer. It also takes some stress off your immune system, right? And then usually there's some microscopic amount of tumor cells left after you do that. And so if you've had an advanced cancer that has traveled to your lymph nodes or traveled through your bloodstream, then you need some kind of whole body systemic plan. And then that's also individual too, because some people, if they don't have a really aggressive, fast-growing tumor cell line, they have more choices. And so some of my patients decline conventional cancer treatment and choose to just do all natural treatment. And then some people combine conventional treatment of surgery, chemotherapy, and radiotherapy, and also hormonal therapies with herbs and nutraceuticals and dietary changes. But I will say it takes an unusual person to do an all-natural approach, because you have to be committed. It's hard work. It's complex. You have to be able to afford it. It can be expensive. And you have to be the kind of person who can get organized and be compliant and stay with it for a long time, maybe for the rest of your life. And so when someone comes in my office and says, I just want to do all natural, then I also look to see if they're that kind of person, right, who will do that.
Yeah, yeah.
Because if they won't, it's too risky.
Yeah, and I really appreciate what you're saying. I think for most people, that integrative approach is a really great way to go. And my father had a squamous cell cancer. He had a place on his chest that they had removed from a dermatologist, but unfortunately the dermatologist didn't get all of the squamous cell. So it metastasized to lymph nodes under his arm. He had a mass develop from that. And as you probably know, a squamous cell cancer, it's usually one that people, you know, can get rid of really quickly just by removing it. But once it metastasizes, it usually spreads really quickly. So we were really concerned about him. And this was 10 years ago now. He had the surgery to remove the lymph nodes under his arm. He chose not to do any radiation, which was what was recommended. But he followed a very strict naturopathic, functional medicine regimen. And he, 10 years later, he's perfectly fine, no cancer. He's doing great. But like you said, it was, he had to work really hard at following, taking, a very specific diet and taking certain supplements very regularly, managing his stress, getting good sleep, all of those things that we talk about is really important, right?
Yes, and a way that I explain why this matters is to think of the metaphor of a garden and building the soil in a garden. so that when you grow your plants, they're really healthy plants and they give you beautiful fruits and flowers and they don't get sick, right? And so you build that from the soil. And in the same way, that terrain or soil that our cells are in our body, determines whether we grow weeds or healthy plants, right? Healthy cells. And so by changing your diet, by using specific herbs and nutrients, you're actually changing that terrain that is around your tumor cells or your healthy cells and changing what happens. So the goal is to create an environment that is inhospitable and not supportive to the development, the growth, and the spread of cancer. And so that's actually what we're up to. Like, that's the big idea on the framework for it.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, one of the things that people talk about sometimes with aging are hormones change, right? We know that hormones play a role in cancer. And then people, there's bioidentical hormones. People talk about this balance with hormones as we get older. What are your feelings about hormone therapy and the risk for certain cancers like breast cancer?
Well, each person has to understand their own unique risks. So if you have a family history where there are hormonal cancers, you have more risk than somebody who doesn't, number one. And I think it's also important to understand that, for example, estrogen not only drives prostate and breast and ovarian and uterine cancer, but it also drives lung cancer, pancreatic cancer, and colon cancer. So we don't think of those as hormonal cancers, but many of those other cancers have estrogen receptors on their tumors. And so one of the reasons we have this epidemic of hormonal cancers, all those I just mentioned, is because the environment is full of hormone-like chemicals, pesticides, herbicides, plastics for the most part. So by eating a diet that's more hormone-free and not drinking water or storing food out of plastics, you will reduce some of your environmental unnatural hormone stimulation. People who carry the BRCA1 and BRCA2 genes, which have been in the news quite a lot, especially from Angelina Jolie and her mastectomies, realize that you should know whether you carry those if you come from a family with ovarian and breast and prostate cancer or colon cancer. You should really look into that because those are also driven by the BRCA gene mutation. But that's only 5% of all cancers, so it's not a lot of people. So this issue of hormones is actually a bigger environmental issue about overstimulating our cells, sending too many hormone signals to our cells. And those hormones actually are growth signals. And so if you want to grow more cells, you have more estrogen around. And so when you ask the question about bioidentical hormones versus pharmaceutical hormones, the more important thing is what happens to your blood levels of hormones. So in the 1950s, there was this book called Forever Young when the use of estrogens started. And so women would take these really high doses of estrogens and try to create the physiology of a 30-year-old when they were menopausal. That's dangerous. You know, that's dangerous. So whatever path you choose, number one, you should have normal hormone levels for your age. And if you're going to take too many hormones, you're going to be in trouble. So that's number one. Of course, we want to use bioidentical when we can because the old Premarin that came from was too strong for human beings. And so it overstimulated our cells. So it's actually an art, the use of hormone therapy. And a patient considering this should be under the care of a very skilled and experienced clinician who understands how to use bioidentical hormones, how to test you and follow you to make sure you're not metabolizing estrogen into pro-cancer forms. And so you really need an experienced person. And I will say, like, for women who've had their babies and they had their OBGYN, that doctor might not be the right doctor when they're in their menopausal years because it's really a specialized area of knowledge to understand the hormonal needs of perimenopausal and postmenopausal women. And maybe your OBGYN just knows about babies and the physiology of of women who are in their childbearing years. So we might outgrow our doctors as we go through our life cycle. But it's a special area of knowledge. Estrogen isn't the enemy. You know, I think it's important to understand that, you know, and that having normal amounts of estrogens and progesterone and testosterone is actually good for our health in small amounts, in very small amounts. So it can protect your brain, it can protect your heart and your blood vessels and your bones and your libido and your mood. All of those things are quality of life issues. But if you overdo it, you could actually produce disease.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much. I think that information is very valuable, and I think that'll help clear up a lot of questions that people have, because there is so much conflicting information, particularly I think with my audience with around this topic of cancer and hormones and which kind of hormones and then also the chemicals in our environment that, like you said, the endocrine disrupting chemicals that we have that we're exposed to and how that plays a role into all of this. So
yes,
really,
yes.
Not necessarily a simple answer, but requires people like yourself to help guide people. Dr. Nalini, what do you think about soy? Soy has been very controversial, the good and the bad of soy.
There's a lot of confusion about soy, and it's actually a very intelligent question, right? Because the reason people ask about soy is because it's full of plant hormones, right? Plant estrogens. And so I'll get physicians saying, we can't do soy because it's estrogen. But soy is a food, not a drug. So let's say that first of all. And you could never eat enough soy and whole soy products to get a drug-like effect. However, you can get a protective effect by having whole soy foods in your diet. So these plant estrogens actually are what we call weak estrogens in comparison to the estrogen you make in your own body. And so there are some really interesting studies done in parts of the world where people have soy as a main part of their diet, as in Asia. And most of these studies were done in China, where there's a lower rate of hormonal estrogen-related cancers than there are in the United States. And so it was shown that eating soy can actually be protective. And the reason for this is these weak plant estrogens actually bind to your estrogen receptors on your cells, blocking your own stronger estrogens from binding there. So you actually get less hormonal stimulation if you're eating plant estrogens. But what's also interesting about soy itself, we have two different kinds of estrogen receptors in our bodies, type 1 and type 2. And soy will bind to the estrogen receptors in your bones and in your brain more readily than in your ovaries or your prostate or your uterus or your breasts. So it actually ends up promoting bone and brain health and not stimulating these hormonal cancers. So there were studies done about 5 years ago that really cleared this up. And soy actually contains aromatase inhibitors. And this is a class of drugs given to men and women who get estrogen-related cancers, prostate and breast cancers primarily, to stop estrogen from being produced in the tissue. And that's really the risk after you've had a breast cancer. And you can't really measure that in the blood. But soy actually ends up being protective to these women and men, not harmful. So I think it's really important to understand that soy is actually a great source of protein and causes many people in the world to have enough protein in their diets. And so I'm not anti-soy, as many people are. Small population of people will have soy allergies or not be able to digest soy or have it impact their thyroids. It's a very small number of people.
Okay. And then there are also very highly processed soy versus getting edamame, the actual soy beans and soy milk and tofu. Those are less processed, right, than some of the other foods out there.
Yes. So you really want to be eating traditional soy foods, you know, not these modern texturized vegetable protein. That's not what I'm talking about. But steamed green soybeans, edamame, traditionally made miso, traditionally made soy milk or tofu. These actually are fine foods if you digest them well.
Great. All right. how do people find out more about you, find out more about your work? Because I just know you're a wealth of knowledge.
Yes. Well, I practice in Santa Monica in the Los Angeles area. And because this is such a big need for information, I've created a website called integrativecanceranswers.com. And there's a ton of free information on there about food and diet. We have I think we have over 300 recipes on there, healthy recipes now. And I also have sections for wherever you might find yourself in the cancer journey, whether you're just diagnosed, you're in treatment, you're recovering from treatment, or you just want to think about your life after cancer or not getting cancer in the first place. And I also have a book called 32 Ways to Outsmart Cancer, which is on Amazon. And so I have a lot of free resources. And I also do phone and Skype consults for patients who want to consult with me. But really, there's just so much information I've tried to provide as a resource online.
Okay, great. All right. Thank you so much, Dr. Nalini, for your information today. Really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Okay. Bye-bye. I hope you enjoyed this interview today with Dr. Nalini. To learn more about Dr. Nalini, you can visit my website, drtrevorcates.com, go to the podcast page with her interview, and you'll see the information and links to her website there. And while you're there, you can subscribe to the Spa Doctor podcast on my website or on iTunes so you don't miss any of our upcoming shows. Thank you, and we'll see you next time.